I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My thanks this week to sponsor Hayloft Plants Limited from Pershore, Worcestershire.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello from a hot and steamy Essex. Welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some news, views, and a bit of timely advice on all things gardening. Goodness, it has been hot. Whew. This week, the thermometer racing up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. That's, I think, 50 degrees Celsius in the polytunnel, where I have to say the melons are loving it. I've got three plants of Alvaro, said to be one of the earliest to ripen outside. And given the protection of a polytunnel and some good soil, they just run across the surface. And already from the three plants, I've got six rapidly developing fruits. You can pretty well watch them swell. It's not just here. My former American TV colleague, John, in Arlington, Boston, USA, tells me that the temperatures there are absolutely steamy. And similarly, the garden centre business is really steaming ahead. They're up by 30 to 40% and continue to trade strongly, when there is usually a drop-off through July and August when those temperatures get so hot. Demand for plants is still high, and the problem in America, apparently, is getting supplies, both of plants and of garden supplies generally. It's a similar story here, really. I've been looking about on local garden centres to try and buy a bag of ericaceous compost without any success at all. I don't know what we're supposed to do. I may have to get some flowers of sulphur and mix a little of that in to try and reduce the pH of the ordinary potting composts. This year, the Plant Heritage Brickell Award 2020 has gone to Malcolm Farrow, the head gardener at Marwood Hill Gardens, where they hold the national collection of Astilbe, some 200 different cultivars. Chris Brickell was, of course, the founder of Plant Heritage and is now their vice president. And the members, together, hold some 400 national plant collections and do a great job in maintaining that library of good garden plants and varieties that would otherwise have fallen by the wayside. Jane Southcott at the Three Counties Malvern Society announces the launch of the first of a new series of Malvern Plant and Garden Fairs, and the first one starting on the 12th and 13th of September. There'll be open-air events and geared really for passionate gardeners. The first one of these fairs has already got 36 award-winning specialist nurseries that will be putting their plants on display, including Hardy's Cottage Garden Plants staging their new Japanese anemone. It's called Frilly Knickers, and you don't need me to tell you the shape and colour of those petals. Really keen plant enthusiasts are encouraged to book for special tickets that allow them to go in at 8:30 and have the first pick of plants on display. Will George, a former grower for the National Trust, feels that that organisation has been slow to open its plant centres and is missing a trick by being overcautious. There is a difficulty with these retail centres on big gardens. in that you have to book, and apparently with members of both the National Trust and the Royal Horticultural Society, they don't have to pay to visit gardens, and so they are booking, and if for something crops up or if the weather isn't quite to their fancy, they just don't turn up, which is a great pity, really, because it's preventing other people coming, particularly for the first two time slots in the day. I was sad to hear the death of Ernst Wertheim, who has died aged 100 in California. Ernst coined the term garden centre and has been a driving force for good garden centre design around the world. His book, Chasing Spring, is a very interesting read, including in his early years, the escape from Nazi Germany in 1938 and being shot at as he ran to get on the last train to Holland. He made his way to America and served with General McCarthy in the Far East during World War II and went on missions behind enemy lines. He was a great character. I spent some very interesting hours and remember the really good advice he gave to those of us who were starting out in the garden centre world in the 1960s. Now, what is the burning question of the day? Well, I was posed the question of naming a plant. Now, that's always a bit unnerving. You know, there's an awful lot of plants, and we're expected to remember the names of all of them, and people just tend to forget that the more years you've been about, the more days you have to remember, and it can be quite testing. The plant in question that I was shown was a roeo that has strap-shaped leaves with really bright purple colouring, and it's a pretty easy to grow. You can just divide bits off it. It has a useful common name, Moses in the Cradle, which comes from the bracts which hold the tiny flowers towards the base of the plant. Many people may go to the internet for a bit of help when it comes to plant naming. I still find the expert books by Dr. Dave Hussain invaluable in this respect. I mean, the houseplant expert, for example, if you thumb through those pages, you'll quickly see the colour picture of the plant you're trying to name. But you don't just get the name. Of course, you get all the other details, the sort of temperature it needs, the position, bright or shady, how will you water it, when it needs repotting, all that kind of stuff. Boy, he produced some great books, Dr. Hussain. And you would be well advised to keep one or two of them on the shelf at home. When it comes to seasonal advice, well, then the lawns. I'm told they're still lush and green in North Wales and up in the northwest where they've had some quite heavy rain. Here on the east, I'm afraid things are terribly dry and the grass pretty brown and burnt up. It's still worth running the mower over the turf every week or two just to trim off the bents, what we call those tall, thin seed heads that come especially on the ryegrass cultivars. If you just snip those off before they get too tall, keeps the turf looking tidy. And if you do let them run away, of course, the roller just pushes them down. They miss the cutter blade, and once you've gone past, up they spring again. And pretty miserable they can make the turf look. I'm just starting to pick some of the really large fruited tomatoes, which of course tend to be a little longer in growing and later ripening. For the first time, I've just picked a really huge fruit on a beefsteak kind called Buffalo Sun. It pretty well fills my hand and weighs just under the pound, and the colour is gold, and at the base flushes red. It's a bit ugly around the calyx, but I think when I cut a slice or two across it, it will very nearly fill a slice of bread, and I'm told the colour is beautifully pink and gold inside. It's not quite ripe. I must just leave it another day or so. There's the variety Honeymoon, and that has a slightly pink flush to its colour, and I'll be interested to see what they taste like. Now, with this weather very, very hot and drying, we need to be careful, because the physiological condition on tomatoes called blossom end rot is very likely where plants are allowed to get dry. If you've got three tomato plants in a average grow bag, for example, they're going to need watering twice a day in the current conditions. And if they do suffer from drought and the plants have to wilt, they don't take up enough calcium, and this is what causes the blossom end rot. If you've got fruits with that black damaged to the base of the fruit, I'm afraid you can just pick them off and discard them. As long as you get the watering right into the future, then the fruits that are following should be okay. And adding a little bit of calcium, that's a fertilizer that's usually sold under the name calcium, but includes a bit of nitrogen fertilizer, watering that on can be helpful. It's also useful to spray the foliage on apple trees. Do it in the evening, of course, because a condition called bitter pit comes where fruits are developing quite quickly without enough calcium. And just spraying the foliage and giving them that bit of extra calcium will help avoid the bitter pit problem. It's particularly likely on the dwarfing rootstocks, that's the Morling 9 type of roots, and where that's used to grow the Bramley apple, then that combination does tend to attract bitter pit problems. I'm very pleased to introduce my guest to the podcast today, Steve Austin, who is the perennial business unit manager for a company called Ball Colgrave, one of our leading companies supplying ornamental plants, mainly from seed, young plants and divisions. But Steve, you're a fairly new arrival at West Adderbury in near Banbury, aren't you?
Yes, that's it, Peter. Yeah, I joined Ball back in the autumn last year. Back in October. So, yeah, just over 7 months now I've been in position.
And a baptism of fire. I understand you're setting the place alight.
That's it.
with enthusiasm for hardy perennials.
Yeah, it's quite bizarre, really, because obviously the world's a different place today with what's going on. But I'm really excited to have joined at this time, really. It's given me a great opportunity to get hold of all the new perennial genetics and ones that are on the market, actually, and put them through their paces. And, as you say, we've got a riot of colour out at West Adderbury this summer. It's fantastic.
It is indeed. But, I mean, you've been in the trade for some time. You were with the famous Hillier Company?
Yeah. So, I started my training at Rittle as a student, did my national diploma in horticulture.
And then Steve, I didn't know that. Another Rittle student,
yeah.
Eh?
That's it. Yeah. And went to work for Beth Chatto for a short time to get my. I wanted to really learn plants and how they grow, and so got my grounding at Beth Chatto. And whilst I was at doing my national diploma, I worked for the Sir Harold Hillier Gardens for a year. And that got me in touch with the Hillier connections and Kevin Hobbs, who I know that you've done a podcast recently with. He was a good mentor from those days. And I joined Hillier Garden Centres first, worked in the retail for 18 months, and then joined the nursery side. And I was there for nearly 6 years then after that, working with the trees and the shrubs and thoroughly enjoyed that experience.
Goodness, Yeah, you have some experience there, though. Yeah. You know, Beth Chatto and Hilliers, it would be a job to beat that for work experience.
Yeah, so I'm very lucky and have worked alongside Beth before. Obviously, she sadly passed away not too long ago. And yeah, Beth is an incredible plants lady. Yeah, and then more recently, sort of more into the a bit more of the commercial world, really. But I'm, you know, at heart, I like to be known as a plantsman because I love my plants, and really through the work I do today is to try and bring the best genetics to the consumer, really. And I feel a responsibility in my role to make sure that I'm putting the varieties through their paces so they perform well in gardens and for the nurseryman, really, who's got to grow them for the consumer.
Yes, if a new plant comes onto the market today, it has to go through quite a lot of hoops, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, really, the length of time. And to many consumers, buying a plant in the garden centre have no sort of comprehension, really, what goes into it, do they? It's years of work from selecting in the initial selections to going into tissue culture to be cleaned up, make sure the plant is clean and reliable. And that's before they even get plants to the likes of you and I for testing. And then you've got garden performance, nursery performance, and before we can then start selling, really.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When I saw you last Friday, we were talking about and looking at several new varieties of Nepeta.
Yeah.
Catmints. They were perfect examples of what everyone's looking for, you know, a good nursery plant and a very good garden plant.
Yeah. It's fascinating, the catmint, isn't it? Because it's a plant that that does really well in the garden, and there's good old traditional varieties, the Walker's Low and the Six Hills Giant. And for the consumer today, buying those, they do a good job, of course, but they tend to flop about a bit. And one variety that both you and I like is Persian Blue.
Yeah, don't get me going on that. I think people are bored of me. I think it's one of the best plant introductions for 10 years, yeah.
It's fantastic. We got it here, as you saw, flowering well. And Persian Blue, as you've explained before, doesn't flop. It goes on for months flowering. And one variety I showed you is Kitten Around. And Kitten Around, I think the breeders have had fun, haven't they, with these names? There's lots of cat puns here, but Kitten Around, as the name suggests, it's small. Now, for the listeners and the people in the garden who have got small spaces, you know, this only grows to 30 centimetres maximum, and it doesn't flop. It's not feeble. It's got the same flower power as Persian Blue, and it's a great little plant. And I think even for alpine sections could be fun.
Yeah, but, you know, you don't leave it there, do you? You know,
no.
I'm just about remembering Persian Blue. And then you introduce Kitten Around. But then you've got Whisper.
That's right, Whispers. We've had a couple of people saying, is that a spelling mistake? But the Whispers, now they're very new. And Whispers are more garden varieties. Like Persian Blue is mound forming, whereas the Whispers are a little bit taller. And we got a pink. The pink's fantastic. The it's more lilac-y pink, kind of very pale pink petals, but the old sort of flower stem, the calyx, looks really attractive, sort of burgundy pink. And the blue is a good electric blue colour. So that's coming for 22. That's coming on the market. So we're really excited about those. Good new introductions.
And of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? What other plants would you tempt us with? I mean, can I mention Agastache?
Yeah, please do. Agastache. Now, we work with the world-famous Terra Nova nurseries in North America. Those guys.
Oh, that's Dan, the big Dan Himes, who brought us a lot of Heucheras.
Phenomenal work those guys have done. I visited a couple of years ago, and gosh, as a plantsman, it's a paradise, you know.
I've never been. It's on the West Coast, isn't it?
Yeah, Oregon, and it's amazing. They've got gardens there, and of course, their fabulous breeding ground. And one of their more modern hybrids I particularly like and think has good garden performance is Morello. It's a variety that's been on the market about 18 months now. And Morello's a good, strong grower. So really in the garden, we're sort of talking up to a metre maximum in its ultimate height, but really sort of half a metre when it's growing. Good burgundy underside to the leaves in the spring and really good sort of pinky purple flowers. Very big flowers as well. Not too brittle, Peter, as well. It doesn't flop or snap about like some varieties. So,
and of course, that has a sort of, the leaves have a herby sort of smell.
Yeah.
Is it licorice?
That sort of licorice smell. So, that's a nice, good addition for the border. So we're just bringing that onto the into our range now.
And then there was a very dark-leaved ajuga. That really caught my eye. I mean, it looked almost metal, burnished, dark bronze. Yeah.
Yeah, that's ajuga, black scallop. That is, it's one of the darkest ajugas on the market. We used to grow it at Hilliers years ago when I was there, but it kind of disappeared. And I was in Singapore Gardens last autumn, and you know the gardens by the bay.
I certainly know of them, but I haven't visited. I mean, you're dropping some names here, Steve. You were Dan Himes on the West Coast, and then before you know where you are, you're in Singapore. What?
It's no, I like to travel with my holiday, you see, and I love visiting gardens and I like to see where the plants come from. And I'd never been to Singapore. I'd used it as a stop-off point for travelling, but went down there last year. And I have to say, anybody that's been or thinking about going, it's amazing for plants. I was blown away by the choice and the just what was there. It was a true paradise. And this ajuga was growing there. Black scallop was growing. It was flowering well. And I thought, blimey, that's a real worthy plant and worth including in the range. Easy to grow. When it's grown in full sun, it gets that wonderful black foliage, like you say, and good blue flowers.
But it's interesting. So, I mean, it was growing very well with you in West Adderbury, where the temperature is, you know, reasonably modest. I mean, Singapore, it's a sweatbox, isn't it? Really hot and humid.
Yeah, and there was no sign of any mildew or foliage degradation at all. So it's a really interesting to see how these plants survive around the world, really.
Yeah. When I went to Singapore, the Bay Garden wasn't even thought of, I don't think. I went to the Botanic Gardens.
Yeah.
And I remember walking about through, what I would have thought were houseplants, really creeping about.
Yeah.
And I'd seen some rodents downtown in Singapore. And I said, what do you do here with rats? Are they a problem? And he said, no, we've got a python that eats those. Made me step a bit carefully through the stems of Monstera. if I asked you for two or three plants that people should look for, but both to go in containers and to plant in the borders, what should they be looking for over the next 12 months or so, Steve?
Well, couple I'd like to touch on. One is the some of the more modern echinacea varieties. There's been an awful lot of work done on echinacea, and you've seen it, and we touched on it, the work that the RHS are doing on the trials there. That's coming to an end now on their echinacea trials. I've done a fairly extensive trial here at West Adderbury this year, because lots of people say to me they love echinacea in the garden, and but they can't grow it on the nursery, and that turns a lot of people away from growing it. And one that I really want to highlight as a good, strong growing variety for the patio would be a variety called Sun Magic Vintage Red. And Vintage Red is a brilliant variety. It's been bred in Germany, and the breeder does breed some of the fancy Rudbeckia varieties that we'll talk about in a moment. And what I love about this echinacea is we planted some in a 23 centimetre, a 5 litre pot in April this year. And I did the normal thing, like I would with any echinacea, is just take that first flower off. Otherwise they sort of tend to flower themselves out early. Pinch that off, and there's got to be over 100 flowers on it now. It is incredible.
That's almost like the old African marigolds, isn't it?
Yeah.
You needed to take the first flower off to really get the root system going and get the most from them.
Yeah.
And that's a very good tip for gardeners. So would you do that with all echinaceas?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, in that first year when they're planting them in the garden, definitely. The growers will notice a big difference from that in the garden. Instead of having one flower, they'll have multiple flowers, and they'll withstand the weather better then as well. Otherwise, they tend to get a bit floppy and they can break, which is quite heartbreaking.
And then you mentioned Rudbeckia as well.
Wow. Yes.
I was at Hyde Hall this morning, where, of course, we've got a trial of over 80 of them.
Yeah.
And we've got some, I think, that you don't have, and you've certainly got some that we don't have.
Yes. We're working with, as I mentioned, the German breeder, the same breeder who works on the Vintage Red. His performance on his Sunbeckias, he sort of brands them as, but they are marvellous. One plug potted in April again, and there's 50-plus flowers, and these flowers are super-sized. You've seen them yourself. You put them in the palm of your hand and they sort of cover it. They're incredible things.
Well, I use my thumb and little finger stretched out to measure.
Yeah.
And that's 9 inches. And some of those flowers were actually just on 9 inches across. Cool. For Rudbeckia. That's huge.
It is.
Yeah. And what kind of feeding treatment do you give? I mean, you'll be growing a lot of these perennials in 3.5 and 5 litre pots.
Yep.
They're vigorous and they take quite a bit of water and feeding, don't they?
They do. We, as standard, we try not to overfeed the varieties here, because we like to give them as true to type testing as possible. So all of our perennial compost has control release fertilizer in, which you know is best advised for anybody growing these at home. We do then, certainly as once they start reaching a potful and start setting buds, we then give a liquid feed, just to encourage the flowering and just to prevent the foliage from degrading as it flowers. So just a general feed that we give every sort of fortnight, really. And that's until they start flowering. They've stopped now feeding. That's all we tend to do, really.
Right. So slow release at the beginning.
Yeah.
In a good, general potting compost. And then as they come into flower, it's almost like the story with tomatoes, isn't it? When you've got the first fruit that are 55 pence piece size.
Yeah.
Then you start every 10 to 14 days with a high potash feed. Yeah.
And the sort of tip I always suggest, I mean, if people, it's really the space they want to grow. So if people are planting more than one, or even if they've got one in the garden, it's give them plenty of space. They can get drawn up if they've got allowed plenty of space. As I mentioned, it's one plug. It was a 60 plug, so that's like a 4-centimeter plug planted into a 5-liter directly. So that's quite a big jump. So when people are planting in the garden, give them plenty of space, and they'll sort of settle in better than otherwise get drawn up.
Yeah, that's a mistake that I keep making, even with all my experience. The Persian blue, we put those too close.
Yeah.
When they went in, it looked as if, you know, they got miles of soil between them.
I know.
But just a few weeks and, boy, they covered the ground.
Yeah, people were asking me questions here. They said, gosh, you're a bit brave putting those small plugs in that big pot. Do you know what you're doing? I was like, yeah, trust me. And they filled it. And you're right. It's when you do initially plant them in the ground and you give them all that space, it's, yeah, you do have to question sometimes.
Yeah, I think the new varieties that are being introduced have so much more vigour. You know, I think they're very healthy. They have a lot of vigour.
Yeah.
And if they're carrying a lot of flowers, then they're going to need a lot of water and food. Yeah.
Yeah, and the technology and propagation has changed. I mean, I've been in the industry over 10 years now, and when I started out in the industry, there was a lot of cuttings, and tissue culture was, you know, really up there for some of the real premium perennials. But the tissue culture propagation method now is that's how all these Rudbeckias are propagated. And that propagation method gives so much vigour to the plant. It cleans any virus from the initial stock. So these plants are really primed and ready to give good garden performance for, you know, 3 to 5 years easily. If not longer.
Amazing. Steve, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see what you have to show us next time I come.
Definitely.
Up.
There's plenty more where that come from. So, yeah, I look forward to it.
As to the tailpiece, how about the quote from Helena Rutherford Ely? And she wrote, "The watering of a garden requires as much judgment as the seasoning of a soup." And I think she has it in a nutshell. Although currently it's a matter of just getting enough water on many of the plants outside. But for most of the year, just getting the watering right is the key to plants growing well and looking healthy. Have a good week. Sit in the shade in the height of the day, and I look forward to being back with you next week. My thanks this week to sponsor Hayloft Plants Limited from Pershore, Worcestershire, and to my producer, Rich Jarman.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.